We are on Kuf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph. We're up to the 13th line in the middle of the line. Yibay Elohu. Okay, so the Gemara, again, we're continuing some of the discussions that we were discussing yesterday about salvaging things from a fire, about what has or what does not have Kedusha. So the Gemara says, Yibay Elohu, Hagilyonin Shel Sifri Torah, Matzilin Osan Mipnei Hadleika, O Ein Matzilin Osan Mipnei Hadleika. The Gemara raises the question regarding what are called the Gilyonin. The Gilyonin are like the empty, the blank spaces around the text of a Sefer. Or do those parts of the Sefer, those blank spaces, also have Kedusha? Meaning, can I save them from the fire on Shabbos or not? So the Gemara says, Tashma, Sefer Torah Shabbala, im yeshbo lalakit shmonim v'chamish osios kagon parshas vayibin soa ha'aron matzilin v'im lavein matzilin. The Gemara says that if I have a Sefer Torah that is starting to wear out, as we mentioned yesterday, the only way that you can salvage such a Torah from the fire on Shabbos is if it has at least 85 letters, which again corresponds to the number of letters in the psukim of vayibin soa ha'aron. So the Gemara asks, v'amai tepukle mishum gilayon didei. Why is it the case that if, let's say, I have less than 85 letters, so we said that you cannot be mechal Shabbos to save such a sefer. The question is, why not? What about all the blank spaces around it? So, in other words, if you assumed that the blank spaces actually had kedusha, so then lechora it shouldn't make a difference how many letters you have in the sefer. You should be allowed to be mechal Shabbos to salvage that sefer just because of the blank spaces. So the Gemara says, no, that's not necessarily a proof, because bala shiny. Maybe one could argue that a sefer Torah that's starting to wear out has a different set of standards than a regular sefer. In other words, if the sefer is already, decaying to such a degree where you really can't salvage it anymore, maybe in that case we say that you require din of 85 letters. But maybe for a regular sefer to save it from the fire, maybe even less than 85 letters would be okay, again, because of the blank spaces around the text. Okay, so the Gemara now tries again, Tashma, Sefer Torah Shenimchak, Im Yesh Bo Lalakit Shmonim Mechamish Osios Kigon Parshas Vayibin Soha Aron Matzilin, Vim Lavein Matzilin. So the Gemara has a similar type of a case. Here, instead of the Torah wearing out, in this case, many of the letters of the Torah were erased. So again, if you have at least 85 letters in one area, so we said that's enough of a justification to be mechalel Shabbos to save the sefer. But if you don't have 85 letters in one location, then you cannot. And the question, of course, again is ve'amai tepukle mishum gilayon didei. The same question we had in the previous case, which is why not? In other words, why can't you be mechalel Shabbos because of the blank spaces? So the Gemara once again says no. The Gemara explains mekomaksav lo kami boyali. The Gemara says that we were never asking regarding the actual text of the sefer. That was obvious, right? Dechi kadosh agav ksavu dekadosh, right? Because the blank space in the sefer only has kedusha because of the text, right? So therefore, the Gemara says, Azal ksav, azal kedusha say. So once the text goes away, once you don't have enough text to justify, being mechal Shabbos, so then effectively the blank space also doesn't have the proper kedusha. Ki kami boyali shalmala v'shalmata shebin parsha lefarsha shebin daf ledaf shebeschilas asefer shebesof asefer. So what was the Gemara shaila? What was the suffix in the Gemara? The question was, am I allowed to be mechal Shabbos to save those parts that are immediately above or below the text, or the blank spaces that are in between various partios or various sections or various columns or beginnings of svarim or ends of svarim, meaning the actual blank space on the top and the bottom of the overall scroll, that for sure does not have kedusha unless there's actual text there. The question is, what about the blank spaces that are like in between the lines, in between the text? The Gemara says maybe that blank space has a little bit more kedusha than the rest of the blank space that kind of surrounds the scroll. So the Gemara says again, v'sepukle mishum hahu. So why? Again, why can't we just say that the blank space that's in between the lines, in between the text, should be enough of a justification to be mechal Shabbos? The Gemara says, no, degai is v'shadei. The Gemara says that maybe one could suggest that the case here was where somehow the blank space surrounding the sefer got cut off, it got cut away. So now all that we have left to deal with is the blank space that's, kind of sandwiched between the text, that's actually within the words. So in other words, the Gemara's question was, why do I even need to come on to this blank space in between the letters, if I could just say that the regular blank space surrounding the scroll has Kedusha, that would be enough of a reason to save the Sefer. So the Gemara says, no, you could argue that maybe this particular case, all the blank space surrounding the text got cut off. It got cut away somehow. So that's why we have to contend only with the blank space in the middle of the text. But it could very well be that in a normal case where the outside blank space was not cut off, one could argue that maybe that does in fact have Kedusha, and that I would in fact be able to be Mechal Shabbos to salvage it. It's just that in this particular case, that blank space happened to get cut off. That's why we're discussing the other blank space that's within the text. Okay, so the Gemara tries again. Tashma, Hagilyonin Shalmala Vishalmata, Shebein Parsha Lefarsha, Shebein Daf Ledaf, Shebeschilas HaSefer, Shebesofa HaSefer, Metamenes HaYadayim. Now the Gemara invokes a slightly different halacha, not related to saving Svarim on Shabbos, but the Gemara focuses on a separate point, which is which parts of a Sefer make your hands tummy. Now, what does that mean? Why would a Sefer even make your hands tummy in the first place? So the Gemara and the Mishnayos mentioned this in a few places, that there was a Takana de Rabbanan, that if a person handles a Sefer Torah, let's say for example, or a Sefer of Nach with their bare hand, so then their hands become tummy. Because again, there's a whole discussion in the Gemara about what the nature of this takana is. But the bottom line is that your hands become tamei midrabanan. So the Gemara suggests that not only is that true when you handle the actual text of the sefer, but any of the blank space, as we just said, that immediately surrounds the text, either within the text or above the text or beneath the text, all those things are also metamei esayadayim. Now, if you're going to tell me that all that blank space is metamei esayadayim, so then the assumption is that those parts also have kedusha. So the Gemara says, no, that's not necessarily true. Agav Sefer Torah Shiny. The Gemara says that, again, one could make the argument that those parts of the scroll, those blank spaces, only have Kedusha because, again, they're together in the same area as the actual text of the Sefer Torah. In other words, in this case, we're not talking about, as in the previous case, where the Torah, let's say, was erased, where many of the letters were missing. This is a fully intact, written Sefer Torah. Nothing is missing from the Torah. So you could argue that maybe in this particular case, the blank space has Kedusha because the whole Torah is intact. If the whole Torah is intact, the Torah has Kedusha, and all the blank spaces in the middle have Kedusha. But in the previous example, where let's say where many of the letters were missing, one could make the argument that maybe the blank space in the middle would not in fact have Kedusha. Okay, so the Gemara tries.
How come the Torah is metame? Because of mice.
Yeah, exactly. The Gemara says that there was a Gzera de Rabbana, that maybe mice were going to come and attack, they were going to start to chew away, to gnaw at the Svarim. They wanted to make sure that, it wouldn't become Tamei, and they wouldn't be Matamei Truma. There's a whole discussion in the Gemara about this, and it's primarily found in Mishnayos and Maseches Yadayim, in Seder Taharus, to talk about the nature of that Gzera.
Well, if that's the reason, then what does that have something to do with the
Ktav? What was that? It has nothing to do with what?
With the writing.
Well, I mean, yes and no, because meaning if you thought that the blank space had no Kedusha, then we wouldn't really concern ourselves with whether mice are going to chew away at the blank space.
No, but the writing is what attracts the mice?
No. That's not the concern. Meaning, you're right. The initial reason for the Gezeira was...
Leave the food alone, but...
No, correct. No. The initial reason for the Gzeira is because of the mice, but the thing is that if you have, in other words, if you're going to contend that part of the scroll itself does not have Kedusha, like the blank spaces, so then we're not going to really be so concerned whether the mice start to chew away at the blank spaces, because it doesn't have Kedusha anyway. All we would really care about is whether they start to get to the actual text. So the fact that Chazal even made a Gzeira on the blank spaces would lead us to believe that part also has Kedusha. That's the kind of the gist of the proof. Okay, so the Gemara tries again with a fourth proof. Tashma, Hagilyonin v'sifri minin ein matzilin osan b'nei hadleika, elin esurafin b'mekoman hein la'azkerosan. The Gemara says that when you have Gilyonin, which again we'll have to define in a second what type of blank spaces we're dealing with here, or if you have what are called sifri minin are books that are written by apikorsim. Now again, in this particular case, and the way the Rashi explains this, is that let's say you have a person who's an apikores who wrote a kosher sefer Torah, or he wrote a book of Nach, and he wrote it properly with the right ink, and the right ksiva, and it was ksava shuris, and he used, everything was done properly. The only problem was, the guy who wrote it happens to not believe in Hashem. So the Gemara says, in such a case, so you are not allowed to save such a Torah from the fire. In fact, the Gemara says, you have to let the Torah, including the names of Hashem in the Torah, burn. Why? So Rashi says, because we assume that when this person, this apikores, wrote the Torah, even when he wrote Hashem's name, he was probably intending for some idol, for some avodah zarah. So therefore, one could argue that even if externally it looks like a proper Torah, the assumption was that this Torah was written l'shem avodah zarah. So the Gemara says, my lav gilyonin de sefer Torah. The Gemara says, seemingly, right, in other words, this brisa lists two different things that you're not allowed to save from the fire. Gilyonin, which again, we assume are blank spaces, and then it also lists these books that, you know, these svarim sefer Torah written by Apikorsin. So the Gemara says, if the first thing on the list, the gilyonin, are the blank spaces of a Torah, so the Gemara says that you're not allowed to save that from a fire. Wouldn't that lead us to believe that they do not have Kedusha? The Gemara says, no, it's not true. Gilyonin de sefrei minin, when the Gemara said the blank spaces, it was referring to blank spaces of a Torah written by an Apikoros. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Hash de sefrei minin gufayu matzilin. Gilyonin mibaya. In other words, if you just told me that you're not allowed to save an actual sefer Torah written by an Apikoros from the fire, then why on earth would I think that I could save the blank spaces? The blank spaces, for sure, have less Kedusha than the text. Meaning, even if you believe that blank spaces have Kedusha, they definitely don't have as much Kedusha as the text does. So if you're telling me that the actual text of a Torah written by an Apikoros, we have to let it burn in the fire, then Kal v'chomer, we have to let the actual blank spaces burn. So the Gemara says, you're right, Haki kamar. The Sifri Minin, Harehin Kigilyonim. All the Gemara meant to say was that a Sefer Torah written by an Apikores has the halachic status of a blank space, which basically is another way of saying they have no Kedusha. So that's what we seem to conclude from this Brisa, at least, that the Gilyonim, the blank spaces, do not have Kedusha. Okay.
Rabbi, yeah. Are we going to get to a point where we discuss Sifri Kodesh?
So the truth is that in the Gemara itself, we don't really talk about that so much because those did not really exist in the times of the Gemara, right? In other words, even what they called Chumashim, which the Gemara does discuss in a few places, was essentially a scroll of one of the five books of Chumash. So, like, back then, that was their Chumash. It wasn't a printed text, obviously. It was one scroll. So, you know, the conception that we have today of a Chumash or a Tanakh or a Sefer doesn't really exist in the Gemara's mind because it didn't, you know, that wasn't really a thing back then. So, you know, it's going to be kind of hard for the Gemara itself to discuss it. There are poskim, you know, who discuss. I think we mentioned this briefly yesterday. There are poskim who discuss the halachic status of a sefer, of a chumash, a tanakh, a Gemara, etc. So again, that's kind of a separate point. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara now says gufa hagilyonim b'sifrei minin in matzilin osam mibnei hadlika. Rabbi Yossi Omer b'chol koder esah askaro shebehen v'gonzan v'hashar sorfan. So the Gemara presents what seems to be the following machlokas. According to the Chachamim, again, reiterating what we just said in the previous Gemara, if I have blank spaces or if I have books, a Sefer Torah written by an Apikores, you are not allowed to save that from the fire on Shabbos. Rabbi Yossi seems to have some more of like a tempered, you know, kind of a middle ground opinion, where he says that if it's a weekday and let's say a fire breaks out on one of the Sefer Torah of an Apikores, then what you should do is that you should cut out every mention of Hashem's name in the Torah, and you should bury it, and then the rest of the Torah you can let it burn. Again, this is all during the week. Amar Rabbi Tarfon, so Rabbi Tarfon responds to Rabbi Yossi and says, Akapeches bini is an expression that Rabbi Tarfon actually uses in a few places in Shas. It literally means like, I should bury my son, meaning he's taking a shavua, like a very powerful shavua, where he's trying to refute, you know, to undermine what Rabbi Yossi just said. Shim yavo liyadi sh'ani esrufo sam yeso askaro shebohen. So Rabbi Tarfon felt very strongly, he says that if I ever encounter a Torah that was written by an Apikores, I am going to go out of my way to burn the entire Torah, including the names of Hashem that are in it. Why? She'afilu adam rodif acharav lehorgo v'nachash ratz lahakisho. Even if a person is being pursued by a murderer or by a snake who's trying to kill him, nichnas lebeis avodah zarah ve'in nichnas levatan shalelu. It is preferable to run, if you're looking for safety, to run away from a murderer or a snake. It's better to go into a house of idol worship than it is to go into a place of in a place where these Apikorsim are. Again, obviously, I wouldn't call it necessarily a place of idol worship, but a place where the Apikorsim, you know, hang out, as we'll see in a second, what exactly that means. Shehalalu makirin v'chofrin, v'halaluin makirin v'chofrin. Because at the very least, you know, the people who were Ovdei Avodah Zarah, who were always that way their whole lives, you could argue, okay, maybe they never discovered Hashem. They never, you know, they don't understand what Hashem is in the first place, so it's almost like they're kind of like a Tinuk Shanishpa, right? It's not really their fault. But the guys who are Apikorsim, they used to be religious, they used to be, you know, they used to be from, and then they threw everything away. So those people are even worse. And the Gemara says, Va'aleh and Akasav Omer, about these people, it says in Sefer Yeshaya, Va'achar Hadelas Amzuzah Samt Zichronech. It says that these people, these Apikorsim, took your memory, took your, you know, in other words, you know, thinking about Hashem, and they threw it behind the door. They threw it behind the doorpost, which basically means that they are degrading the name of Hashem. So the Gemara says that you're better off running into an actual house of idol worship to protect yourself from a murderer or a snake, as opposed to a house where, you know, where these apikorsim are. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yishmael, Kal v'chomer, Umala, so shalom bein ish le'ishto, Amra Torah shemisha nechta b'kedusha yimacha al hamayim. So Rabbi Yishmael presents the following Kal v'chomer. We know, of course, that in the context of the Isha Sota, Hashem permits us to erase his name in order to preserve a sense of peace between man and his wife, right? In other words, to ensure that the wife was faithful. So halalu shematilin kino ve'eva v'sacharus bein Yisrael la'avim sheba shemayim alachas kama v'chama. So certainly Hashem would want his name to be erased in order to preserve peace between the Jewish people and everybody else. Because again, remember, these apikorsim, as we'll see in the Gemara in a second, were always trying to rile everybody up against the Jews. They were trying to get the Christians angry at the Jews, and they were trying to engage in these, you know, philosophical and theological discussions where they were trying to undermine, you know, belief in Hashem and Judaism in general. So Hashem says, for sure, I'm okay with having my name erased in that context, with having, you know, the Torah that they wrote being burnt, if it means preserving peace between, you know, basically between the Jews and everybody else. Va'alei amar David, and David HaMelech says about these people in Tehillim, so the pasuk says that Hashem basically says that I despise these people who are apikorsim, who have rejected me, and David says that I also hate them. I also despise these people who have rejected Hashem. Just as one is not permitted to save such a Torah written by an apikoros from the fire, you basically can't save this Torah from anything that's going to destroy it, from a building collapsing to being to the water or to anything destructive, anything which could theoretically destroy this Torah, especially on Shabbos. You are not allowed to salvage a Torah written by an apikoros. You have to let it burn. You have to let it get destroyed, because again, as Hashem says, these people are trying to get everyone angry and riled up against the Jewish people. Okay, so the Gemara.
Fine, I understand that you don't have to say that weak it is. You need to be proactive.
In destroying it and get rid of them. Well, that's what Rabbi Tarfon seems to be saying. Remember, because Rabbi Tarfon said that if such a Torah were to come into my hand, I would burn it together with Hashem's name. There is a mitzvah in the beginning of the last parak of Brachos. The Mishnah says that there's a mitzvah to go out of your way to uproot avodah zara. At least in Eretz Yisrael, that's a mitzvah. In Chutz La'aretz, you just can't own avodah zara. You can't have avodah zara. In Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara says that there's actually a mitzvah to actively uproot avodah zara. So one could argue, again, I don't know if I would call this avodah zara as much as I would call, you know, maybe like apikorsis. It's a little bit different, but I think it's along the same lines. So at least according to Rabbi Tarfon, for sure, you have to go out of your way to try and get rid of these Sifrei Torah that were written by apikorsim. Again, I don't know exactly what the market was on, you know, apikorsim writing Sifrei Torah. It seems like a very niche, situation. But again, apparently, I guess it was more widespread if the Gemara is talking about it. Okay, so the Gemara now says, so the Gemara raises a question, which again is very much in line with what we were just discussing, which is, let's say I have Sifrei Torah or other Sfarim of Kedusha that were housed in a place known as Bei Avidan. Bei Avidan, as Rashi explains, was a place where basically apikorsim would gather together and apikorsim and also regular, you know, religious Jews would gather to engage in certain, you know, theological, philosophical discussions. And they always wanted to have access to various Sfarim, including books of Kedusha, including Jewish religious texts. So the question is, this is a perfectly legitimate Sefer. It happens to be stored in a place which, you know, is trying to attack and undermine, you know, religion. So the question is, if a fire were to break out in such a place on Shabbos, would you be permitted to save the regular Sfarim in Bei Avidan or not? So the Gemara says, in v'la v'rafya biyadeh. So Rabbi Avo wasn't sure. He was kind of hemming and hawing. He was kind of going, going back and forth. He didn't know what the answer was. So the Gemara now says, Rav lo azil lebe avidan v'kol shekein levei nitzrefei, Shmuel levei nitzrefei lo azil, levei avidan azil. So the Gemara says that Rav would not go to be avidan. In other words, again, he would not go to this place because he was too scared of engaging in these conversations. And we'll see in the Gemara in a second also that there might have actually been a factor of pikuach nefesh involved potentially, as we'll see. And the Gemara says that Shmuel, on the other hand, would go to be avidan. However, he would not go to this place called Bei Nitzrefe. Bei Nitzrefe, again, as Rashi points out, was a base of Avodah Zarah, that, you know, these Persian Zoroastrians, these fire priests. So apparently Bei Nitzrefe was considered to be far more dangerous than Bei Avidan. So Shmuel wouldn't go to Bei Nitzrefe, but he would go to Bei Avidan to engage in these various, you know, theological, philosophical discourses. So the Gemara says, Amru Leila Rava, my time alo asis le Bei Avidan. They said to Rava, why did you not attend, all the discussions at Bei Avidan yesterday? Amar Lu, he said, Dikla Planya Iko Beorcha Vekashili. There was a big palm tree blocking the way, and it was too hard for him to get there. So they said, okay, Niakre, well, you know, we'll uproot the palm tree. Okay, then he said, Duchte Kashili, there's a big pit, there's a big hole that I can't cross over. Rashi says that he was just making up excuses. In other words, he just didn't want to show up because he thought it would be dangerous, or maybe he didn't want to engage in philosophical discussions, whatever the reason was. So he kind of made up these excuses why he wasn't attending Bei Avidan. Mar Bar Yosef Amar Ana Minayu Ana Velomis. So Mar Bar Yosef said that I was one of the people who used to regularly attend Bei Avidan. You know, they used to like me there. We used to get into good, you know, philosophical discussions. And despite the fact that I was well respected there, they still tried to kill me one time because they got upset at some argument that I said or whatever. So again, you see that, you know, attending this place as Bei Avidan was not exactly the safest thing in the world. Okay. Now the Gemara says, Ima Shalom Debisu de Rabbi Eliezer. So Ima Shalom was the wife of Rabban Eliezer, and she was the sister of Rabban Gamliel. So the Gemara says, Hava Hahufi li sofa b'shiv v'vusei, the Hava Shakil Shmud lo mekabel shuchta. There was there were rumors spreading about a certain. Now, usually we translate filisofa as a philosopher, but Rashi says that a filisofa is actually an apikores, which would actually make more sense in the context of the Gemara because that's what we were talking about before. So there were some apikores or philosophers who was in their community, and there was a rumor about him that he never accepted bribes. He was a very honest judge. He never took bribes. So the Gemara says, Bolo Ochuchebe. So Rabban Gamliel and his sister wanted to make a mockery of him. They wanted to prove that this guy did in fact accept bribes. So what happened? Ailo le shraga de dahava. So his sister went and gave him some kind of a golden lamp. Va'ozo le kame. Then she came in front of him with her brother Rabban Gamliel for a court case. Amrale. So she said to the judge, Ba'ina denifle. I want to have a share in my father's estate. So Rabbi Gamliel and his sister's father had died, and we know that Mida Oraisa, the din is that if you have a brother, then the sister's Mida Omeikara din do not inherit anything. So Rabbi Gamliel's sister demanded, she said, I want to have a piece of the Yerusha as well. So Amar Lahu Plogu. So what? No. She's not. She knew the halacha. No. Again. She and her brother are going in front of this judge. Who's, yeah, exactly. So again, this whole case, as we'll see in a second, is staged to kind of catch this guy, accepting bribes.
Of course, we have al tasi mishal
lifnei iver. Well, I think this case is a little bit different because as we started the story with, this guy was an apikores. So it's almost like we're going out of our way to show him up. You know, much the same way that we go out of our way to burn their Sifrei Torah, we're trying to spin in a negative light these people. So everything and everything that we can do to present them in a negative light, that's what we're going to try to do. So basically, the judge says, Plogo, he says, okay, so divide the estate between you and your brother. So Amar Lei, so Rabbi Gamliel says, no, Ksivlan v'mkom bra brata los eros. You can't do that. Because the Torah says, as we know, and as you know from next week's Parsha, from Parsha's Pinchas, that a daughter does not inherit when there are sons. So Amar Lei, so the judge says, no, min yoma de galiso me'arachon, es natilis oraisa de moshe, ve'es sehiva sifra achariti, So this judge said, yeah, forget about your Torah. Since you've been exiled, we no longer give credence to your Torah. Now we follow our new set of laws, and in our new set of laws, everything is very egalitarian. Everything is very, everything's equal. So, so the brother and sister have to inherit equally. Okay, so then what happened? Lamachar hadar ayale ihu chamraluva. The next day, Rabban Gamliel went and bribed him by giving him some kind of a fancy, expensive donkey. So Amar Lahu, so then when they come back to the court case the next day, he says, oh, Shvelis Lasefe de Sifra. Let's look at the end of that Sefer. Again, as we'll see in a second, he's referring to what's called the Evangelion, which is basically like the Christian gospel. It's kind of like some form of the New Testament, basically. So he says, what does it say at the end of that pasuk or verse or whatever? V'chasa be'ana lo, it says, ana lo lemivchas min oraisa de Moshe asisi v'lo lo osufi al oraisa de Moshe asisi uchsev be'mkom bra brata lo siru. So he says, oh, I was never trying to undermine the Torah. No. Really, the halacha is that the daughters cannot inherit when there are sons around. So basically, after he was bribed again by Rabban Gamliel, he essentially changed his mind. So Amra Leis, so Rabban Gamliel's sister says to the judge, Nahor Nahorich Kishraga, your ruling should light up like a lamp. She was referring to the fact that she had bribed in the day before with the lamp. Amra Leis Rabban Gamliel, Asachamru Uvatash Lishraga. And then Rabban Gamliel said, yeah, my donkey came and knocked down your lamp, which again was alluding to the fact that both of them independently bribed the judge, the point of which was to kind of to upstage him, to show that he was really corrupt and that he was willing to accept bribes. Okay, so then the Mishnah said, "Umibnei ma'in korin." We said yesterday, why is it that you're not allowed to read Ksuvim on Shabbos? So we said because of what's called Bittul Beis Hamedrash, because people would come to the Beis Medrash on Shabbos to learn Halacha, and if you were going to teach them Ksuvim, that was almost considered like a form of Bittul Torah. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav, Lo Shanu Ela Bizman Beis Hamedrash, Aval Shalo Bizman Beis Hamedrash Korin. According to Rav, this restriction against learning Ksuvim is only Bizman Beis Hamedrash, is only at the time when anyway the Rav was giving some kind of a Halacha Shir, so then it was not appropriate to be learning Ksuvim, but if there was no other shir going on anyway, and you wanted to learn Ksuvim, so then that was obviously fine. Ushmuel Amar, no, Afilu Shalo Bizman Beis Hamedrash In Korin. Whereas Shmuel says it's not true. Shmuel says even when it's not Bizman Beis Hamedrash, even when there's no halacha shir going on, you're still not supposed to read from Ksuvim. So the Gemara says, really, Ini, is that really true? V'ha Naharda Asrei De Shmuel Hava. So Naharda was the city in which Shmuel was the rabbi. Uvin Naharda Paske Sidra B'Ksuvim B'Minchasa De Shamsa. They used to have a seder like almost like an afternoon seder, Shabbos afternoon, learning Ksuvim. So you see that, so you see that they used to learn Ksuvim in Shmuel's place. So the Gemara says, you're right. Elo i'idmar hachi i'idmar. Amar Rav lo shanu elo bimkom beis ha-medrash, avo shalo bimkom beis ha-medrash korin. Ushmuel amar bein bimkom beis ha-medrash, bein shalo bimkom beis ha-medrash, bizman beis ha-medrash in korin, shalo bizman beis ha-medrash korin. So the Gemara says that really the decisive factor here, according to Rav, it's all about location. If you're physically inside the beis medrash, so then you should not read Ksuvim. If you're not in a Beis Medrash and you want to learn anyway, then you can read Ksuvim. Whereas according to Shmuel, being in the Beis Medrash or not being in the Beis Medrash doesn't really matter. All that matters is what time of day it is. If it's the time of day when the Halacha Shir is happening, you should not be learning Ksuvim. If it's a time when there's no Halacha Shir happening, then you can learn Ksuvim. And the Gemara points out, V'azda Shmuel L'tameh, this is Shmuel L'shitaso. Divina Harda Paske Sidra D'Ksuvim B'min Chasad D'Shabsa. As we said before, they used to have a Seder learning Ksuvim on Shabbos afternoon. So Shmuel says, as long as it's not the time for the shir, regardless of whether you're physically inside of a Beis Medrash or not, as long as it's not time for shir yet, so then you can definitely learn Ksuvim. That's one approach. Then the Gemara says, Rav Ashi Amar, no, Olam Kida Amran Meikara. Really, it's as we said initially, Ushmuel Kirabi Nechemya, the Sanya, Afa Pisha Amru Kisya Kodesh in Korin Bahen, even though we said that you're not supposed to read Ksuvim on Shabbos, Aval Shonin Bahen, Vidorshin Bahen, Nitzrach Lefasuk Mevi Viroebo. But if a person, let's say, for example, wants to give a drusha based on psukim and ksuvim, that would be okay. If you wanted to teach ksuvim to someone else, that would be fine. If, let's say, you were giving a shir and you needed to look up a pasuk in ksuvim, that would also be okay. Meaning, the only thing that you really can't do is just to sit there and read psukim and ksuvim. If you want to give a shir on ksuvim, that's fine. If you want to reference a pasuk from ksuvim, that's okay. It's just that I can't just sit there and kind of blandly read through the psukim. Amar Rabbi Nechemia Memneima Amru Kisei Hakodesh in Korin Bahen Kedei Sheyomru Bechisei Hakodesh in Korin Vekoshkei Beshtarei Hajiotos. Rabbi Nechemia says, why is it that I'm not permitted to read Ksuvim, again, just reading straight through Ksuvim on Shabbos? Rabbi Nechemia says, because if a person realizes that they're not permitted to read Ksuvim on Shabbos, they might come to, you know, to say to themselves, well, if I can't read Ksuvim, then Kal V'chomer, I should not be allowed to read what are called Shtarei Hajiotos. We're going to talk about this a little bit later on in the Masechta. Shtarei Hajiotos are essentially different letters or different types of documents or things basically that have no function on Shabbos. Things, certain bills or documents or things of that nature. This gets, by the way, into a whole discussion, which we'll hopefully talk about later, about reading the newspaper on Shabbos. Apart from all the other issues with taking in the newspaper, if it came from outside of the Tchum and all the other factors that go in, just reading the newspaper itself on Shabbos might potentially be an issue of what are called Shtarei Hajiotos, of reading things that are, you know, for lack of a better term, not Shabbistic, but it's actually even more than that. Because Shtarei Hajiot, as we just said, if you can't read Ksuvim on Shabbos, which is actually part of Torah, it's part of Tanakh, so the Gemara says that's kind of the point. The point is to say, okay, so Kal V'chomer, I shouldn't be reading, history books, English books, novels, newspapers, etc. So again, we're going to talk about this a little bit later in the Masechta. This is kind of only mentioned tangentially here, but the Gemara says that's the reason, according to Rabbi Nechemia, why you're not allowed to read Ksuvim on Shabbos. Okay.
We actually hold like that today, that you can't read the...
No, we don't, Billy. We don't. Move on. Let's go.
That doesn't mean I'm gonna. I'm just curious what the law is.
If you're asking me.
Close your ears, Aaron.
Listen,
Rabbi, don't answer. He's what nature.
According to my Rabbein, I think it's somewhat of an issue, but you can ask your local Orthodox rabbi and see what he says.
Only allowed to read the Jewish press.
Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly.
That's for sure
Hedjotos, yeah. Okay, let's move on. So the Mishnah says, Matzilin tika sefer, masefer, vesikat filin and matfilin, va'afa pi sheyesh besochan maos. The Mishnah now says that not only am I allowed to save an actual sefer Torah or actual tefillin from the fire on Shabbos, I can even save the casing or the mantle, the covering of the Torah or the tefillin as well, even if there is money inside of those casings on Shabbos. Ulehechan matzilin osan. So where exactly am I allowed to carry the Torah or the tefillin to? So the Mishnah has machlokas. Lamavui she'eno mefulash ben besera omer aflu mefulash. According to the Tanakhama, you are only permitted to take this Torah or tefillin into what's called a mavui she'eno mefulash. A mavui she'eno mefulash means that you have an alleyway which is closed off basically on three sides. So in other words, it's more or less kind of like either a rishus hayachid or maybe a carmelit, right? Whereas according to ben besera, you could carry your Torah or tefillin into a mavui mefulash, even if the alleyway is literally open and connected to a Rosh Hasharabim and there are no walls separating it, you would still be permitted to do that according to Ben Becerra. So the Gemara now says, Tana Rabbanan, Arba'asar Shecholios B'Shabbos, Mavshitin as a Pesach Arachazet Divri Rabbi Yishmael Benosha Rabbi Yochanan Ben Broka, V'Chacham Vomer Mavshitin as Kulo. The Gemara now presents a Machlokes regarding what to do if Erev Pesach falls out on a Shabbos, which actually just coincidentally does this coming year, it will. So what happens if Erev Pesach falls out on a Shabbos? What are you supposed to do in terms of the Karban Pesach? Now, the actual offering of the Karban Pesach, we know, of course, is Docha Shabbos, that you bring on Shabbos. The question, however, is what about in terms of flaying or skinning the animal? So according to the Chachamim, just skin the whole thing, as you would on any other year. But according to Rabbi Yishmael Benosha, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Broka, he says that you cannot do that. He says you can only skin the animal up until the breast. Why? Because anything, as we'll see in a second, anything you do beyond that is just to make it easier for you to eat. Now, that meat is not permissible on Shabbos. Anything which is what's called the Tzorech Gavoa, which is part of the actual process of skinning the carbon, because that's the halacha, that's what Hashem said you have to do, that is Docha Shabbos. But anything which just makes it easier for you to eat the animal, that part is not going to be Docha Shabbos, according to Rabbi Yishmael. So the Gemara explains, Bishlam al Rabbi Yishmael ben Osho Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Doha is Avid le Tzorech Gavoa El Rabbana Maitayma. Again, according to Rabbi Yishmael, this makes a lot of sense, because Rabbi Yishmael tells you can only skin the animal up to the point that the halacha says this is what's absolutely necessary. Anything beyond that, which is just going to make it easier for you to eat the animal, well, that's not enough of a reason to be mechal on Shabbos. But according to the Rabbanan, why do they allow you to skin the entire animal? So Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chanan, Rabbi Yochanan, De Amar Kra, Kol Po'al Hashem L'ma'aneihu. So the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Mishlei that says that everything Hashem does is for our sake, it's for us. So the question the Gemara Gemara asks is what's the lema'aneu? So in other words, if everything we do is for the sake of Hashem, so the question is, so then I don't understand how is skinning the entire animal going to be for the sake of Hashem? So the Gemara says, Rav Yosef Amar Shelo Yasriach, Rava Amar Shelo Yehu Katshe Shemayim Utalin Kenevela. So the benefit of skinning the entire animal is either that it shouldn't turn putrid, because if you leave half the animal with the skin on, it's going to start to go bad, or the other option, according to Rava, is that you don't want to have karbanos, you don't want to have kachi shemayim kind of lying out like a dead animal carcass. You want to you want to treat them with a certain measure of kedusha. So the Gemara wants to know.
Rabbi, what part of the carbon pesach?
What was that?
What part of the carbon pesach was for Hashem?
Again, when the Gemara says for Hashem, it means that the part that you skin up until the breast, that was like part of the regular halacha of skinning an animal. Because we know that certain karbanos require what's called hefshet v'nituach. You have to flay, you have to skin the hides. So that was part of the regular din of a karban. But now, the question is, okay, but now I want to have access to the meat to actually be able to eat it. So according to Rabbi Yishmael, you can't do that on Shabbos. You have to wait till after Shabbos. You have to wait till Pesach actually starts to do that, to actually prepare the food. So anyway, the Gemara says, we have this machlokas here about what the reason why the Chachamim allow you to skin the whole animal. Either it's so that it doesn't go bad, or because we don't want to have the karbanos, kind of lying around like a dead animal carcass. So the Gemara says, "My Benai, what's the nafkamina between these two approaches?" So Ika Benayu Demanach Apsoru Dedahava Inami Yoma Deistina. So the nafkamina would either be if the animal carcass was lying on a golden table. So on a golden table, it's not in a state of bizayon, but it could still go bad. Or if there's a cold northern wind blowing in, so it could still look like a dead animal carcass, but it's not going to go. It's not going to putrefy so quickly because there's a cold wind blowing it. For Rabbi Yishmael ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Hai Paul Hashem l'manei my ovid. How does Rabbi Yishmael understand this pasuk from Mishlei that everything we do is for Hashem? In other words, why can't I skin the whole animal according to him? So the Gemara says, Shelo yotzi eso emurin kodem havshat eso or. What that means is, according to Rabbi Yishmael, that you're not allowed to remove the emurin, the innards, the intestines of the animal before you skin the animal. In other words, you can't like puncture a hole in the skin and start pulling all the organs out. You have to skin the animal normally first. My time, I'm Ravuna Bered. Rav Nasan Mishum Niman. Because if you start to pull the organs, the innards out through a hole that you made in the animal skin, there's a fear that some of the hairs are going to get tangled up with the organs, with the intestines, and you're not going to be able to pull it out properly. Okay. Amar of Chista, Amar Marukva. Maya Hajule Chavraya Lo Rabbi Yishmael Benosha Rabbi Yochanan Ben Broka. How do Rabbi Yishmael's colleagues respond to him to his claim? So the Gemara says Hachi Ka Amrile. Im Matzil and Tik Aseferim Asefer Lo Nafshet As Apesach Meoro. They said if the Mishnah told us that I am allowed to save a Sefer Torah together with the casing, together with the mantle of the Torah, so then Kal Vachomer we should say that I should be allowed to skin the animal together with all the hides. In other words, they're saying, logically, if we're letting you save a Torah with the covering, so presumably we should also allow you to skin the entire animal. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Me dame hasim tiltul hachamalacha. The Gemara says these two cases are totally different, because in the case of the Torah, we're talking about carrying something on Shabbos, right? And again, we're not really doing a malacha because we're carrying it into an alleyway that's cut off from the Rishus Arabim. Whereas in the case of skinning an animal, you're talking about a real full-fledged malacha here, right? So the standards presumably are going to be very different from these two cases. That's how Rabbi Yishmael would respond to his colleagues and say, you can't compare the case of the Torah to the case of the Karban Pesach. Amar of Ashi, sort of Ashi further explains, betarte plige. Plige betiltol uflige bemalacha. Really, it's a double machlokas. There's a machlokas regarding carrying, and there's also a machlokas regarding malacha, namely, vahachi ka'amrilei. Im matzilin tikka sefer, ima sefer, lo netaltel or agav basar. The Gemara says, if I am allowed to save the Sefer Torah together with the covering, so then seemingly I should also be allowed to carry the Karban Pesach together with the skins. So the Gemara once again rejects that. The Gemara says, no, me dame. Hasam nase basas ledavar hamutter. The Gemara now is alluding to a idea which we're going to discuss a lot more in the coming prakim, which is what we call a busis. A busis literally means a base, right? So, for example, let's say when Shabbos begins, let's say I have my table where I place my Shabbos candles on, right? That, even though that table itself is not muktzah, there's nothing wrong with the table per se, but because the table is a base for the candles, which are muktzah when Shabbos begins, again, leaving aside the opinion of Rav Shimon, which we spoke a lot about earlier in Masechta, that he denies most of Hilchos muktzah, but according to the way that we paskin, you would not be permitted to move that table itself on Shabbos, even once the candles are extinguished, by the way, because since they were muktzah when Shabbos began, you can't move the table. That's what we call a basis ledavar ha'aser. When something is a base, when it's holding something aser, pitcher, the base also takes on that status as well. Obviously, you can also have, as the Gemara points out, a basis ledavar hamutar. You could have something permissible on the table. Let's say you're setting your Shabbos table, right? So the table itself is a basis ledavar hamutar. You put food on the table. That's all that is a davar hamutar. So the Gemara says, again, you're trying to compare apples and oranges here because, again, the Sefer Torah itself is not muktzah. You're allowed to carry a Torah on Shabbos. So therefore, the covering of the Torah is a basis ledavar hamutar. The thing itself is completely permissible. Whereas in the case of the skin and the carbon Pesach, where again you're not allowed to carry that until Pesach itself, because again we're talking about a case where Erev Pesach is on a Shabbos, which means that you can't. You in other words, which means that the carbon Pesach itself is muktzah on Shabbos because it has no use on Shabbos. So therefore, it's gonna that the skin there is gonna act as a basis to davar haaser. So the Gemara says,
Rabbi, those that felt that the covering might not be able to be moved, you still. If you want to take the Sefer Torah off, you're going to have to take the cover off anyway. So what's the point?
No. No one thinks that the covering of the Torah can't be moved. The Gemara's trying to figure out how this compares to the case of the Karban Pesach, right? That's why the Gemara was quoting this case in the first place, right? That's how we got into this whole discussion, because we were trying to contrast that. In other words, everyone agrees that the Torah, you can move the covering. That's what it said in the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah said, Matzilin tikka sefer im ha-sefer. The only question is, how does that square up with the case of the Karban Pesach? That's what we're trying to figure out. So the Gemara tries again. The Gemara says, Ela hachi ka amrile. Im matzilin tik shal sefer im ha-sefer, so now the Gemara throws in that other factor that we almost mentioned, almost parenthetically at the end of the Mishnah, which is that not only can I carry a Torah with its cover on Shabbos, I can even carry it if there's money inside. So if I can carry the cover of the Torah when there's money inside, kal v'chomer, I should be allowed to carry the meat of the Karban Pesach together with the skin. The Gemara says, no, that's also not a good comparison. Me dummy. Hasam nase basas ledavar haaser, ula davar hamutar, hacha kulo nase basas ledavar. Once again, the Gemara draws a contrast here, because even though, yes, it's true that there's money inside of the cover of the Torah, but at least there's also a Torah inside of the cover of the Torah. So that's what we call a basis ledavar ha'aser v'hamutter. This is also a topic which we'll get back to in the coming prakim, which is that if I have something which is a base, both for something mutter and aser, so at least in this case it sounds like that would still be okay. In other words, even though there's also money inside, it doesn't matter because at least I have the Sefer Torah. Whereas in the case of the Karban Pesach, the entire thing, the skin, is simply a basis for something which is completely muktzah. There is no redeeming factor. There's nothing mutter about the Karban Pesach on Shabbos when it's on Erev Pesach. Okay, so the Gemara tries again. Ela hachi ka amrile. Im mevien tik sheyesh besocho maus me'alma lahatzel bo sefer Torah lo netaltel orag basar. So the Gemara says, well, hang on one second. I am lichatchila on Shabbos allowed to take a covering of a Torah that I know has money in it. I can carry that on Shabbos in order to salvage a Torah from the fire. If that's permissible on Shabbos, and I would say kal v'chomer, I should be allowed to carry the meat of the carbon together with the skin. So the Gemara just wants to know, v'hi gufa menon, how do I know that l'chadchila I can go and take my covering of the Torah with the money, and I can go ahead and carry it on Shabbos to save the Torah? So the Gemara says, ilema demi dehecha deispe lo shadi lehu istu yenami maisinan. If you're going to tell me that, you know, well, if I don't have to throw away the covering of the Torah with the money, in other words, if I'm not obligated to throw the money away, I can still carry it to save the Torah, then maybe I can even carry it lechachila, even knowing that there's money inside of the covering. The Gemara says that's not a good comparison. Mi dame hasem adahachi v'hachi nafla deleika hacha adahacha v'hacha li shadinan. The Gemara says it could very well be that if, let's say, I was carrying something and then I hear that a fire broke out, so I don't have time to start figuring out, is there money in the cover? I have to go run and save the Torah. But whereas here, when you have plenty of time to figure out, when you go lechachila and you carry the covering, knowing that there's money in there, one could have argued, maybe you have to pour the money out. Maybe you have to throw the money away, right? Who says that you're allowed to carry the money in the covering l'chadchila? So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela amar mar bar avashi, l'olam ki da amrina me'ikar. It's really, as we said initially, or the Gemara says, even though we had an issue before, the Gemara raised the question regarding the contrast between carrying versus actual malacha. That was one of the issues we raised earlier about the difference between carrying a Torah versus the skin of the Karban Pesach. The Gemara says the case that we're talking about here happens to be one where you don't need the skin. Now, if you don't need the skin, that makes it a davar she'eino miskavein. If it's a davar she'eino miskavein, we pass like Rav Shimon, then it should be mutter on Shabbos, and there should be no issue with carrying the skin of the Karban Pesach even on Shabbos, even on Erev Pesach that falls out on a Shabbos. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? So what happened to the famous rule of Psik Resha? Because everyone knows that when you're going to skin the animal, even if you don't want the skin, you're still going to get the skin anyway. You're going to be in violation of a malacha when you skin the animal. So the Gemara says, no, deshakele bevarzeh. The case was where you remove the skin in small strips. So it wasn't necessarily a given that you were going to take off enough of a quantity to actually violate the malacha of hafshata, of skinning an animal, because since you're doing it in such small quantities, that's not the normal way to do it, and that might only be relegated to an isra de rabbanan, which potentially in this case for the Karban Pesach, we could deem that it's permissible.